another episode of Meet Me in the Middle. I'm Xander Fadley, the Mr. Regular Guy.
And I am self-indulgent and often criticized.
Right.
Criticized parts, right?
I will definitely agree with that.
You know what? That's a very true statement.
It's, you know what? On both ends. This is probably the truest one of those that you've had so far.
And the thing is I'm a little ashamed of it.
You're a little ashamed?
A little, not really, because it's accurate, and people need to know. I'm very criticized.
Self-indulgent.
Oh, I'm criticized all the time.
Well, I don't help you in that regard, I'm sure. And if anyone would ever comment on our stuff, I'm sure they would agree with me. That's a little hint, hint. Guys out there, listeners, I'm sure there's dozens of you, or a dozen of you, probably. But, you know, we'll work on that.
Well, I don't see why they have to criticize me to comment. Well, they can comment on the sports we talk about. They give their opinion on it. But no, they have to criticize me.
I mean, if they start off with a good criticism of you, it'll get them noticed more likely. Right?
Oh, yeah. They'll go right to the top.
Because then they'll tag you. It'll say, Hunt York is such a dork. But I also really think that the Patriots are going to be great this year. If that's the case, then I disagree on both accounts. Not because it's factual, but because of my personal feelings.
Well, it sounds like I'm going to get my Twitter just blown up when our followers start commenting. I'm going to get terrible, terrible Twitter hate. And you know what? It's fine.
So much trolls. All right. Let's get into it. By the way, hello. It's been 2 weeks. We've been very busy. My sister got married. I had to pick her up from her honeymoon in Chicago. Hunter has been dashing all over the Midwest trying to watch Copa America matches, which he is certified as a media member, a certified media member at those matches for Soccer Pro and Azteca Soccer, which is where you can find his stuff if you want to find more of his stuff, which I'm sure you do because it's all so well written.
Oh, so well written.
So well written. Let's jump into it, all right? We have the news right now. This Baylor thing won't go away. I mean, as much as, you know, a active federal prosecution will go away from the news cycle, it won't go away. This time, Art Briles is accusing Baylor of breach of contract and wrongful termination. Actually, I have the list here. The motion accuses Baylor of breach of contract, fraud, libel, and slander, no comma there, misrepresentation, breach of fiduciary duty, negligence, and intentional infliction of emotional distress, among others, because they didn't list enough already. Now, with these, long story short, Art Briles is saying that Baylor has its own interests in mind when dealing with this federal lawsuit. They're trying to settle this federal lawsuit, this Title IX lawsuit, and he does not want to settle. He's mentioned in the lawsuit as a co-defendant. So in that case, he does have a right to, to not settle. So this motion that he filed today was to get his own lawyer in on the case and to make it so that he can deal with the lawsuit in his own way, apart from Baylor. And the motion states that, among those other things, that basically Baylor is trying to paint him, the athletic director, and those coaches and staff that they fired as the ones responsible for this, rather than an entire lack of institutional control and response to the issue at hand.
Well, I just think it's ridiculous that they could try and seem like they were the ones that are getting blamed for something that happened under their watch. It's the football program that's under this investigation and the negligence that's been shown by the administration and the coaches.
Yes, a large portion of the Title IX lawsuit refers to allegations within the football community, but there are also some from the other athletic departments and just the campus in general. So I can see kind of where he's coming from, but he is obviously self-interested in this. What it comes down to is that the lawyer stated that he does not want to settle or pay anything because he does not feel like he owes anything for this. And that's the part where I definitely have an issue with what he's trying to do. Mm. In the end, I'm sure he'll end up paying something. I don't know if he's going to get this wrongful termination suit turned around. In the article on ESPN, it said that he had been told on May 26th, I believe, that he had been terminated by the university. And if you remember at that point, we mentioned this, that he had been suspended. To the media, they said that he had been suspended with the intention of termination.
Yeah.
So right there, I don't know who is actually telling the truth there, whether Baylor actually told him suspended with termination and he just read his termination or not. And they said that that Baylor are using, they're just using things that he had given them, their lawyers, the group's lawyers, the three defendants' lawyers, the documents and messages and things that he had given them, they had been using against him to make him seem like the sole, the main contributor to this negligent culture there at Baylor.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, as wrong as he sees that, I mean, he's the head football coach, and a lot of this is the football team, like you said, and everyone knows. And he's not the only one that's getting in trouble for this. I mean, they've all but cleaned house at the top. Like, president's gone, chancellor's gone. Well, they got rid of the chancellor, and then the president went to the chancellor, and then he left as chancellor.
I think he was actually president and chancellor, and they just moved him out of the president's seat. And now he's just a law professor.
Yeah, he's just a law professor.
Just a law professor. They also kicked out the AD. He's gone.
Yeah. But, I mean, he can say that they're using it against him, and yeah, duh. They're going to use something against him when you're a main part of this. It's, even though you are not the sole, you know, part of all of it, you're not the main contributor to the culture, but, you know, when this happens under your watch, it's like, it is a terrible, terrible thing going on there. And, you know, when it's your players that have a huge role in it, you're obviously going to get in trouble, and they're going to use things that you show them, text messages, phone calls, emails, they're obviously going to use that against you. They're not just going to go, oh, well, whatever, thanks for these. They're going to look at it and say, oh, wow, you knew about some of this, mm-hmm. and you didn't do anything. And, you know, unfortunately, that seems to be a trend in college football programs, is that if they just want to keep it under the table, like with Penn State, all that going on. I mean, it's been more than proven over the years now that Joe Paterno knew about it. He just didn't want it to get out there.
In the 80s, right?
Yeah.
He knew about it a long time.
Yeah, a lot of those people, they knew about it. And I think it's going to come out and be the same thing at Baylor.
Yeah.
I think we're going to find out that a lot of these people knew what was going on. They just didn't want it to get out. And here we are. It's all out. And they're still trying to save their jobs. I just don't understand it. What goes through someone's mind to think that when you've done this and you've hidden such huge allegations, not just recruiting allegations or anything like that, this is people's lives. Like,
federal lawsuits.
Yes. This is way beyond football. And they're still trying to save their jobs. It baffles me what's going on at Baylor right now.
In the beginning, I actually tried to give them some credit for how they're handling the situation. Clearly, I was wrong on that. I'll admit it. I was hoping that this quote-unquote Christian university was going to handle this in a good way, but they're just handling like any other university, because they are every other university.
Yeah.
It's just they have the... We talked about this earlier. So that story will probably continue to evolve and stick around over the course of the summer. Great summertime reading, I'm sure.
Yeah, definitely.
And probably continue for a couple of years, unless they settle soon. But even then, it seems like Art Briles is going to try to drag this out and go to court. In other news, Hunter and I are in the same room this time.
Yeah. You can actually hear me a lot clearer, and you can definitely hear how terrible my voice is in person.
Right. He's not a robot. That was him through the interwebs.
Yeah.
This is what he sounds like normally. Maybe prefer it through the interwebs, maybe don't. I know which way I prefer it.
Well, that's very sweet of you to say. I'm glad to be here, too. And
now, I didn't say which way I preferred it, but I do say
prefer one. I put two and two together, but okay. It's okay.
In actual news, Ichiro Suzuki, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Ichiro Suzuki has controversially passed Pete Rose's hit mark.
You're putting it controversially.
It's I don't think anybody's considering it controversial. No, it is in the sense of...
It's mathematically
They're celebrating it as that he has done... Yeah, technically, yes. He for his career...
Well, no. We're making that point. He has, with his combined Japan and MLB totals for hits, which are 1,278 hits in Japan and 2,979 hits in the major leagues, Major League Baseball, he now has 4,257 hits. This is of yesterday. I don't know if they have a game today or not. That puts him past Pete Rose's MLB record, 4,256 hits. Now, we are making the point that people are overlooking that Japan is not the MLB. And if you're going to give him, if you're going to give Ichiro Suzuki his Japan numbers, you should probably, for the sake of fairness, give Pete Rose his minor league numbers. He played 3 years in the minor leagues, and we looked this up. He had 427 hits in his 3 years in the minor leagues, which puts him still ahead of Ichiro Suzuki for career hits. Now, yes, I realize that's me equating the Japan league to the minor leagues in the United States, but that's how how players treat it. You get paid more money in the MLB. Your goal in the Japan league is to be good enough to come over to the to the MLB.
Well, I think the interesting part of it is that Ichiro is, unless something happens, just a horrible injury, he's going to pass the 3,000 hit club in Major League Baseball. Very impressive on his own. He's very close to that. And that alone puts him in the top hitters ever in Major League Baseball. But the problem is that when you talk about the record, I noticed that a lot of places were celebrating as if he had won, he had beaten the record.
Right.
But the point has to be made, which you pointed out, is that Pete Rose had 400 plus hits in the minors. And, if you're going to count another league's hits, you're going to have to count the minor league hits for Pete Rose, which puts him well above Ichiro.
And I don't know, he went into the minors at 19, so he probably didn't play much in college or at all. I'm not sure. That actually puts his final number, if you include his minor leagues, is 4,683 career hits in minor and major leagues, which you can consider Japan a minor league. It probably stomps on a lot of people's toes. And considering this is, I believe, our first bit of baseball news.
Well, I mean, it's a big piece of news.
It's a big piece of news because
Pete Rose, obviously, for being the icon that he is and how he's not in the Hall of Fame.
Infamous icon.
Infamous icon.
Which the stats are showing probably won't hold out too much longer.
Yeah. And it's just, it's very interesting that, yeah, I have no problem. I think Ichiro is a fantastic player. The way he's hit over the years, and not a power hitter, nothing like that, just gets on base better than anyone in baseball. Probably not now, but, you know, back when in his prime, especially with the Mariners, he was a special player. And something that people overlook with him is that, I mean, he had more home runs and way less appearances in Japan. I mean, he played in Japan for 8 seasons, and he had 118 home runs, and he's been in the major leagues for 15 seasons, and he's got 113 home runs. So, I mean, it's not, he's not hitting it out of the park. He's just getting a lot of hits to get on base, because if you watch him play, he's not big. He's not he's not exceptionally strong.
He's not Mike Trout.
No, he just hits the ball. He hits it pure, and he runs when he hits it. So, of course, he's going to be, and he's quick, so that helps. So, he hits it, and he's on base. And, I mean, the whole point is that I think, yes, while it's very impressive, he's gotten to that hit mark. Rose did that in Major League Baseball.
Alone.
Mm-hmm. He did not do it with another league. So
He was against the best pitchers in the world for his entire career.
Yeah.
That's the point we're trying to make. By the way, the Japan record for hits in a career is Isao Harimoto with 3,085 hits, which is, you know, we're saying that Ichiro is about to pass that number as well.
Yeah.
In the MLB for just his MLB hits. And that's, I mean, it's a great accomplishment. Oh, it's a great career. We're just saying that
Hall of Fame need
to make. Absolutely. You need to make the distinction that Pete Rose was, you know, he was a different. It's a different number. It's a different number with from different results, from different styles of play. It's a great achievement, but it's not the achievement that everyone is trying to make it out to be.
Yeah.
That's all. You can, you know, if you get mad at us, comment. Comment on our stuff.
I got criticize stuff. Me, then comment. Because apparently that's what we're
tag
doing.
Tag him, then comment. Now to the meat of what we've been doing. Our last episode was just before game one, and
it's so now, much has happened.
It's just now game six, and we're getting back to you guys 2 weeks. Right, game one, quick rundown. Golden State won 104-89. So you're like, okay, well maybe Cleveland will bounce back game two. No, they didn't. They lost 110-77. Yes, count them. That's 33 points. At that point, you're like, ooh, is Cleveland even going to win a game? Because they're getting pretty demolished so far. So, you know, Cleveland comes out and they win 120-90. Oh, wait, what? That's another 30-point game. What's going on? You hit game four. And can Cleveland grab another one and go back 2-2, which would be such against the run of the series? Golden State wins 107-97. 11-point game. The smallest margin of any game in this series. 11 points. Then game five, as you guys probably remember from when it happened, 112-97 Cleveland. We are now 3-2 in one of the more bizarre NBAs as far as like balancing the results. It's just strange. I mean, we've tweeted about it plenty. It's as far as like the teams seeming like the same teams every night, they don't. It's incredible how much different each game has been so far in this series.
Yeah. Well, I think it's very interesting that, you know, game one wasn't a bad game overall. It really was not. It got away at the end because the Warriors do what they do and they pull away in the second. And then game two was just
hard to watch. It was
a blowout.
Cleveland was disjointed.
And you just kept going, oh,
everyone
my
was
Lord.
Well, LeBron is the only player who has shown up for each of Cleveland's games. Yeah. He's the only player who has shown up for each of their games. What happened was we got into this and the 3-point shooting just it disappeared. It evaporated. Yeah. It was gone. And I guess you can say that Golden State's just closing out harder. Maybe they're fleeter of foot than the Toronto Raptors. What it is the Golden State Warriors are far better than the Toronto Raptors. That's what it comes down to. And Cleveland has just had, I wouldn't say a cakewalk, but it has been relatively easy, and they've shown it that. They only lost, two games in the entire postseason up until this point?
Yeah.
And then they lost the first two games of the NBA Finals. Most of these games weren't very fun to watch. Game one was until the fourth quarter, and then you could go to bed. Game two, it wasn't entertaining. Game three, it was entertaining in that it was so bizarre that we had such counterintuitive results.
Yeah.
Back to back. It's just home court made a big difference in the first three games, and then it didn't in the next two. So it again just shows you how disparate this series has been.
Well, it's just been such an odd series because, you know, as much as the Warriors have dominated, you also kind of get this feeling that the Cavs could win tonight and go to seven.
I think they will. It's hard to judge. It's hard to judge everything. It's hard to judge anything. Yes, let's go back to game one. Our pre-series predictions. Hunter, what did you say? What do you think? What was going on?
See, I believe that what I meant to say was it would be a great. What I said was Cavaliers in five.
Oh, is that what you? Okay.
It was a bold prediction.
Now, what I said, what I meant was what did you mean?
What I meant was
kind of what I said.
The Golden State Warriors are going to come out to a great lead, and the Cavs are going to make a good series.
And they're going to win Game Five. That's what he meant. He was predicting one particular game.
Yeah.
Now, I said Cleveland in seven.
And you could be right still.
And believe me, I was not confident in that pick after the first two games. I thought it was like, oh, I just hope we can get five games out of this. Like I said, I was hoping that you could just be right on the other side of the on the other side of it. Yeah, but you know, game five. I was gonna say it's the most entertaining, but again, in the second half, things just kind of went haywire for one of the teams and not for the other. Let's dive into it. First of all, game four, the big thing was late in the game. There was a little tussle between Draymond Green and LeBron James. It wasn't much. They both went to ground. Then LeBron tried to step over Draymond Green. Mm-hmm. And Draymond Green may or may not, as in he definitely tried to give LeBron a little forearm shiver between the legs.
Well, that's at least, you know. And so Draymond's going to headbutt someone next because he's trying to kick Steven Adams. And now he's trying to hit LeBron. So next
thing I don't want to see him put his head down there.
I don't either, but you know, it's heading that way. He's moving up his body.
Oh, okay, I see. It's the migration of the groin hit has gone so far north. People made a big kerfuffle about how he was suspended for that hit. Mm-hmm. You guys should make the correction. He was not suspended for the hit. Mm-hmm. He was assessed a post-game flagrant foul for the groin hit, which he probably should have been in the middle because it was an excessive hit.
Yeah, absolutely.
It just wasn't to the head, so no one did anything about it. It wasn't like, you know, when the guys get hit in the face and they flop back.
Yeah.
Or, oh.
Who are you referring to flopping?
That's not what I'm talking about right now. I'm talking about how Draymond Green was already, going into game four, he knew that he was one flagrant or two technicals.
Yeah.
Away from getting suspended a game. And guess what? He was assessed a post-game flagrant foul for that hit.
Which added up to him being suspended.
So he was not suspended for that one thing. It was over the course of the playoffs. Yeah. He has earned himself a suspension for game five.
Well, the same thing applies tonight. If he has another, say the Cavaliers win and he gets another flagrant foul, he's out for game seven.
And as game five showed, he is very important to this team. And I'm not going to disagree with you. Here's the numbers. In small ball in the 2016 finals, that's when it's Draymond alone as the big man or anybody else. In Draymond's case, they are plus 51. They're shooting 56.3% from the field. And from three, they're 48%. That's when he is the lone big man. That includes the death lineup, when it's like Sean Livingston, Harrison Barnes, Draymond Green, and Steph and somebody else out there. Or Andre Iguodala, that's probably usually is. Or the death lineup with Curry, Clay, Harrison Barnes, Andre Iguodala, and Draymond Green. That's the death lineup. That includes that. And then for all other guys, when it's just one other big man on the court, they are minus 16, 43.1% field goal, and 32.7% three-pointers. The three-point drop alone is, what, it's 15 points.
Yeah.
15 percentage points between Draymond being on the floor and everybody else. And that's because Draymond has the ability, one, he sets great pick and rolls.
Yeah,
he's absolutely great for the pick and rolls. And two, he can shoot threes himself.
Yeah.
Bogut can't shoot threes.
No, but that's another loss, though. The Cavs, they struggled against big men, and Bogut hasn't been unbelievable this series, but...
Well, he's never unbelievable. That's not his job.
Yeah, it's not his job. It's just his job to be in the lane and cause the disruption. Okay.
Steve Kerr, I think we can agree now, is a great coach.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Bogut is a starter. You can't be a starter on that team without there being a reason.
Yeah.
So they're going to miss Bogut. It's just the rim protection at the beginning of the game. When you don't want people to get off to a good start. When you don't want them getting the easy layups to get in a flow. You want Bogut in there because he's a big body and can stop people. And I think he's averaging... I think he has 10 blocks in 60 minutes in these playoffs.
Yeah.
That's a good number. That's a good rate. That's a good block rate.
Yeah. It's a great one if you consider... And the thing that bothers me, you know, about... watching television and the pre-games and everyone previewing is that they act like it's a blessing that Bogut's gone.
Yeah.
I mean, anyone you lose that's that big on a relatively small team, that's a huge loss. While Draymond Green coming back is a huge addition, let's play a little role here. Let's say Draymond picks up a flagrant tonight, and Bogut's out for the playoffs.
Yeah, now they're minus Bogut
and Draymond. Going guess into the, game seven.
And now who they're going to have to rely on coming off of the bench? Defensive minuses and Maurice Spates and Anderson Varejao.
Exactly. Ooh,
who is getting so much on my nerves. If you're talking about flopping, I'm going to say that Anderson Varejao has been worse flopper in these finals than LeBron James.
Oh, okay? I would agree with that. I think that's how Varejao's always been.
I know, but it's just been magnified in these playoffs. And I was gonna say, I'm pretty sure he's lost his ring just because of the amount of flopping that he's had. The flagrant flopping that he has done in these finals, especially in game five and game four. It was outrageous. That's a side note completely apart from what we're saying. But you can't... That means they could be in Game 7 with those guys as their main big men.
Yeah.
You watched it. You watched Game 5 when Bogut was gone in the second half. What happened? Harrison Barnes was their center.
Yeah.
For a large amount of the time. They were trying to run their depth lineup with Harrison Barnes at center. And he's not big enough. He's not a rim stopper. He can't...
Yeah.
LeBron James can go over Harrison Barnes almost at will. Kyrie Irving can go around him with his... You know, reverses and switching hands and stuff, almost at will. That's not a good enough defensive team at that point to stop the Cavs.
If the Cavs have another hot night, and they don't even have to drop 82 between two players.
Which we haven't even touched on what the Cleveland's doing right as opposed to what Golden State's unable to do.
Exactly. And the thing is that we are not saying Draymond will pick up a flagrant, but, I mean, it's not absurd to say he will what he's been doing.
Yeah,
it's not out of the question that he could get in trouble again because he keeps on doing the same things. No matter what round of the playoffs it is, he keeps on getting in trouble. And you cannot do that. If he gets one tonight and the Cavaliers win the series, it's not specifically him, but he would have a huge, huge just mark on his back for the rest of his career because he'd be the guy who played...
I don't know the rest of his career. That's a little dramatic.
Well, the NBA remembers what everyone does at any moment. Everyone remembers what people did like 20 years ago and the loss in Game 5. The playoffs, you know, magnify, as you used, mistakes. They magnify little things about players. And with Varejao, that's flopping. With Draymond, it's his inability to stop making dumb decisions when it matters. And not like, you know, shooting, should I shoot here, should I... It's, you cannot act out or lash out like that.
Now
on the world's biggest stage in basketball.
When there's 70 cameras on you, all recording, they're all recording. The NBA can get 17 different angles of each one of those groin hits.
Yeah, and that's the thing about modern day basketball is that you can get a flagrant after the game. You can get a flagrant when they look at the footage and go... Oh, yeah, we were wrong not to call that in the game. Here's your flagrant. You're out for this game. And I think that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that sometimes this season it's been a little much. But in this situation, it was right. It was the right call.
It's just so... The game is hard to referee.
Yeah.
People are getting all over the referees.
It's so fast-paced.
Yeah, it's back and forth. If somebody gets a block that's kind of, you know, a little bit on the sketchy side... The other team's going down the court. You have to get back in position to call that. It's a really tough game. Now, I think they could use a fourth official. I don't know whether they put him on the floor, but just another set of eyes on there would help anything. Yeah. Would help at all. Eventually, we'll probably just move to robot referees and camera angles and whatnot.
Oh,
and
fantastic.
It'll be fantastic.
I say we get rid of referees and just do self-goal.
There we go. That's right.
That'll solve everything.
Yeah, I'm sure that'll go. If you thought LeBron was a flopper before, or Anderson Varejao was a flopper
Playing pickup ball with LeBron James and Anderson Varejao.
One on one.
Self call. You ever gonna get anything? Absolutely not.
Well, you're gonna get a lot of free throws.
You're gonna foul out of a one on one game.
Back to the point.
Let's talk about LeBron.
Let's talk about what Cleveland did right in Game 5. And here is the stat that will tell you what LeBron James's did right in Game 5. Second half, LeBron James and Kyrie Irving had 39 points on 15 of 26 shooting. The Golden State Warriors in the second half, as an entire team, 36 points on 12 of 45 shooting. LeBron James and Kyrie Irving outscored the Golden State Warriors in the second half on an amazing percentage.
Well, this is the Kyrie we wanted to see for so long. We want to see him just, you know, he always plays, to, in my eyes, a little bit too timid. He always plays with just that little bit of like, should I give the ball to LeBron? Should I pass to him? But the thing is that they're both great players. Just completely different, you know, styles.
Well, here's the stat to support that. Kyrie, in Game 5, was 10 of 15 for 22 points on solo offense. That's where he gets the ball in the inbound, dribbles up, and doesn't pass to anybody. It's just him. It's an ISO for Kyrie. Now, in the first four games of these play of these finals, on the same type of offense, he was 13 of 39. So we're talking about 10 of 15, missing five shots only to below 30, no, to exactly 30%, 13 out of 39. That's the difference right there.
Yeah.
That's the difference right there. And they can't rely on it is the problem.
Yeah.
In the end, Cleveland cannot rely on Kyrie's production to put them over the top. And along the same point, they can't rely on LeBron James scoring outside the paint. In games 1-4, he was 23 points shooting outside of the paint and five threes. That's in four games. And in game 5, he had 20 points and four threes. That's not good offense by LeBron James. For LeBron James, he needs to be getting to the rim at this point.
Yeah.
Now, what has happened was, this plays into it, Draymond Green was not in the game. He did not have to worry about Draymond Green. Draymond Green closes out hard on shots. He's great at closeouts. And I think this shows. It shows that in this game, he was not ever guarded by Draymond Green to come out and try to stop him. They're giving him the threes and not contesting. So he makes them because he's the world's greatest player right now.
Yeah. I think that, you know, now we can't expect this to happen again. We can't, if it does happen again, it would be crazy. Because that's the first time in NBA Finals history teammates have both gone for 41.
Right.
In the same game.
Yes, in the same game. And I think it's the second or third time we've had three players over 30 points. Because Klay Thompson had over 30 points.
Yeah, I just think it's very...
Yeah, you cannot rely... You can't rely on every game for LeBron James and Kyrie Irving, and this is what they did in Game 5, to score or assist on 97 points.
Yeah.
And the Golden State Warriors to only get 97 points an entire game.
Yeah.
You cannot rely on that type of production and greatness in back-to-back games. Now, they could give it to you, but you can't rely on it.
Yeah, I mean, they could do it again.
I mean, in the fourth... the last 25 Cavs field goals were scored on or assisted by LeBron James. The last 25... The last shot that was not assisted or scored by LeBron James was an Iman Shumpert layup with 5.5 left in the second quarter. Okay? That's how much their fingerprints were all over Game 5. They were everywhere. And granted, I mean, they played the entire game. So, of course, LeBron did not play the entire game. But I don't think you had LeBron and Kyrie off of the court at the same time in that game. I can't say that with absolute certainty. But I'm fairly confident in that. And they did great. It was an amazing game. And LeBron James picked up some more points on Michael Jordan in that. Yeah. I don't know if you knew this, but he now has the most 20-point games in postseason history. 174. Wow. Michael Jordan, 173.
So that proves it. I'm just kidding.
He also has increased his lead over Michael Jordan in the highest points per game in elimination games. Mm. This is with a minimum of 5, mind you. So, I mean, you could have a guy who's been in 4 games with, you know, I don't know, more than this. But it's hard to do. LeBron James is averaging 32.4 points in elimination games. Michael Jordan averaged 31.3. Wilt Chamberlain, 31.1. And Kevin Durant with 29.8 out of nowhere. Now where Michael Jordan still has him, and this is an outrageous stat. Yeah. Get ready for this one. This is the opposite of an ESPN bad stat, stupid stat of the day. This is most 45 plus games in postseason. What's your guess for Michael Jordan?
10.
23.
Wow, that's convenient. I like that.
20. You're right. 23 45 or more point games in the postseason. Next closest, Wilt Chamberlain with 8. And then Allen Iverson with 7, which is impressive. Yeah. Which is impressive for how little he was in the playoffs. And then LeBron James also has 7. So Michael's still got him there, but that's because they're different players.
Yeah, I mean, we're not going to compare. They're different players, different style of play, different eras. Not worth comparing. Just appreciate. They're both amazing players.
Guys, just stop saying there's no discussion between Michael Jordan and LeBron James. There is a discussion to be had. And I've just given you stats to support that there is a discussion. I mean, you get down to it, and I mean, I don't know what to expect from the game tonight. Really?
Well, I mean, I want to make a prediction. I'm scared to after my failure to predict the series, so...
Yeah, that was definitely a failure.
We all make mistakes, and mine are just bigger than everyone else's. Tonight, I'm going with a Cavaliers win, and I'm going to say they win...
Are we going to get
115 to 90.
115. Another.
There hasn't been any. If you look at it, there hasn't really been any. Every winner has scored over 100.
Oh, okay. I thought you were gonna point out that every game has been by over 10 points.
Yeah.
Which is the first time since, I believe, 1988 is what I saw, that there has been a 10-point difference in every game.
Not to mention it's in Cleveland.
Right.
Without Bogut. And Draymond's coming back after missing a game. I think he's going to be, even though, you know, they practice all the time and stuff,
yeah.
I think he's going to be a little bit shaky to start. I think he'll finish well because that's just their go-to. But I think Cavs win.
J.R. Smith always plays better in Cleveland for some reason. And Kevin Love has to have a bounce-back game. Well, let's talk about Kevin Love a little bit. Kevin Love is getting lots of flack for his performance, or lack thereof, in these finals. Yeah. And while you can't really defend his disappearance during these finals, I think people are taking it way too far.
Well, yeah, I told you this. No. I was watching his and hers.
I don't know why, but okay.
Well, nothing was on. And Jamel Hill makes the statement that Kevin Love is not a superstar on any other team.
Which means that she thinks that he is a superstar on this team, which is funny in and of itself.
But then... Michael Smith on there, you know, scoffs at it and basically says, but the Lakers are wanting to make him a star.
I said that too.
And she said, it's not worth it.
It's not worth it.
Kevin Love is a fantastic player. Has he struggled and very visibly? Yes. But he is a star. His star power alone and the way, what he did in Minnesota made him a star.
Year after year. Yeah. He was an all-star in Minnesota on a team of terrible players.
Hey,
underperforming players.
There we go.
Now his name escapes me. The Chris Bosh syndrome.
Yeah.
He's the third man in the big three.
Yep.
Look what happened when LeBron James left Miami. Chris Bosh came out of his shell, and he was integral to the success of a continually successful Miami Heat team.
Well, I actually saw something very interesting, and this is aside from his performances in the final, but...
Kevin Love we're talking about.
Yeah, Kevin Love. Kevin Love or Carmelo Anthony. I think it's a stupid trade, get away from being the third man in that
sense. It would totally make sense for Kevin Love.
Yeah,
it would make 0% sense.
Why would Carmelo want to play? I mean, LeBron would just become a shooting guard.
The better question is, why would Cleveland want Carmelo? Why would Cleveland want a ball stopper on their team? Carmelo, in his mind, is always the number one option. Yes?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely. To me, it does not make sense. But it's interesting.
If it's a three-team trade...
Yeah, if it's... I think Love to New York would be good. I do. I think that would be a good trade for him. He'd have a great young center with him.
Yeah, a true center. So he doesn't have to play center.
So I think that situation would be great. But Melo to the Cavs doesn't make sense to me.
No.
I think you're right. If a three-team
be a three-team trade. I don't even... I don't know if the Lakers would want him. And that would be quite a move. Maybe Phil Jackson would come with him.
Oh, so you can go back to his, like, 35-year girlfriend?
And fiance.
Oh, they're engaged now.
They're engaged.
Sorry.
Jenny Buss.
Let me know when they actually get married.
Okay. I will, sure.
I appreciate that.
We'll definitely mention that in a post.
But I know that that's aside the point, but I just... I think that the interest from around the league shows that Love is not only seen as a good player in people's eyes, but a star player.
When you think
of good power forwards in the league, Kevin Love's in the conversation. He's not just in the conversation of, Oh, and Kevin Love.
Aside from like his shooting, which can be very good, he's also a fantastic rebounder. And we haven't seen him much in the NBA Finals, but his outlet passes are a thing of beauty.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, baseball, football passes down the court to LeBron James. It's like nearly three quarters of the court. Inch perfect. Inch perfect passes. Well, it's amazing.
Well, going back to your rebounding point, you don't get a chocolate milk commercial.
That's right.
About rebounding. Yeah. If you're not a great rebounder.
With a really cool.
I think that's proof enough. Don't show me stats. Don't show me anything.
Show me a robot who's bad at shooting the basketball, but great at making rebounds.
Yeah.
Or making like reboundable balls, I guess.
And then show me Kevin Love drinking chocolate milk walking away, and that shows me everything.
The thing about rebounding is you have to assume every shot's a miss. If J.R. Smith is uncovered and on your team, I guess it's a good thing to guess. But if he's got a guy in his face, watch out.
He loves being guarded, though.
He does. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, if he's not guarded, you gotta assume it's going to be a miss.
Oh, yeah. When he's wide open, you go, oh, boy.
LeBron, before game five, if he was shooting from outside the paint, you got to assume it's going to be a miss. I think people give LeBron James way too much heat for basically everything.
Would you criticize LeBron to his face? No.
What I know, he's like 6'8", he's 6'8", 0% body fat, and he could rip my head off like the mountain. And spoiler alert, I guess it was just a random faith militant, but whatever. When the mountain ripped off that guy's head.
I haven't seen the episode.
Yes, you have. We watched it together. It's also just a random guy.
Yeah. No, let's not kill off any main characters. That's aside the point. That is Game of Thrones.
We're trying
to see who takes the crown in the NBA.
Game six of seven.
To all of our fans that are now turning off the podcast, I am so
sorry.
So sorry.
So sorry. Sports.
Sports are good.
NBA. NBA Finals.
NBA, Major League Baseball. And yeah, there you go. What's your prediction for the game tonight?
All right, though? You gave yours. What was it again?
I said, I believe, 115 to 90.
115 to 90. That's what you said. Cavs, 115 to 90. I would love the Cavs to win again because I said Cavs in seven, and I can still stick by that because the series isn't over. I hope this is actually a good game to watch and not another double-digit game.
Yeah.
I mean, this series hasn't proven that that's possible yet, but I think that... Curry needs to do something in these finals, by the way.
It's those dad shoes, man. Those dad shoes are holding him back.
We did not even touch, once again...
Under Armour painted some New Balances that you find at Walmart that the old people rock.
Uh-oh.
And they went...
Orthopedics.
Yeah, and they went, you know what this would look cool on? A basketball court.
Oh, boy.
And now...
It looks kind of like it's made out of marshmallows.
It may be. That's new tech, man.
Anyway, once again, we almost let Steph Curry get off the hook for underperforming in these finals. We just lambasted Kevin Love. But Steph Curry, because Klay Thompson's a better player. Because he's so darn cute. Steph Curry, because he's so darn cute, gets off the hook. And we let him off the hook.
I really do think Thompson's been the better shooter out of the two in this final.
Yeah.
Overall in the finals. Curry's had some deep... That one game, he had a really good
game
performance.
I mean, he actually had... Well, game four,
yeah,
he was great. He had 38 points, I think.
Yeah, but the problem is that Thompson's been the more reliable guy.
Yeah, well, he's also... Thompson has been all around the better player.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I still don't think anybody from the Warriors have risen up to the level of... We haven't talked about this. I just remember in the podcast. Hmm. This is a really hard NBA Finals to give out an MVP for on the Golden State side. On the Cavs side, it's obviously LeBron James because he's almost averaging a triple-double.
Yeah.
With 30 points.
I mean, yeah, the Warriors win. Sean Livingston had a fantastic game.
Game one is Sean Livingston. Game two is Draymond Green. Game four is Steph Curry. They haven't had... You can't say that anybody... I mean, the safest bet would just say, oh, well, Andre Iguodala because of his defense on LeBron James. When LeBron James is getting a triple-double, I don't think that argument holds up 2 years in a row.
No.
Especially when, if you look at the numbers, LeBron James is definitely doing better against Andre Iguodala this year than he was last year.
I think they would play it safe if the Warriors won. I think they give it to Klay. I really hope they wouldn't just say, oh, here's Steph Curry. Because he has not been the best player in the finals. He has not. Not even close.
But if he comes down and...
I mean, if he drops 40 tonight and they win the game, yeah, he'll get it.
Right. If he drops 40 in either night and wins the game,
yeah,
that means two games are now his MVP.
Yeah.
Because we already established that game four he was the MVP because he scored 38 points. Yeah. And he did look very good in game four in Cleveland. I think that... I've heard this said. I think it was on PTI. The narrative is already written. For Steph Curry. He was a unanimous MVP this year. The Warriors won 73 games. Everybody is just... I think I may be directly quoting Michael Wilbon here. Everyone's just waiting to finish that last paragraph when Steph Curry wins the NBA Finals and is handed the NBA Finals MVP. And everybody crowns them the greatest team that has ever lived.
Yeah. I see, I'm torn because I love good basketball.
Yeah, and they play...
If the Cavaliers win in seven, the Cavaliers win in seven. And I am not a fan of either team. I like both teams, but my team sits at home and watches these teams all playoffs. We make it in the first round, and then we go, we made it.
Well, I don't know how you guys made it in this year with your, 27 players that have cycled through something?
27 an NBA players.
Record. I think it was an NBA record. I can't remember. NBA record
by, like, eight.
Yeah, it was like a large margin. It was not even close. And then you fire Dave Yeager.
Yeah,
because that makes sense.
But we, I really do want the Warriors to do it because it would be history, and I love watching history.
Yeah,
but I also want a good series. I would rather the Warriors win at home in seven.
That would be way more exciting.
Because you'd win in a very exciting seven-game final on your home court, and that would just make the narrative there so much better. But it also wouldn't be... I also think they could win tonight by a good bit.
They could.
Not saying they will, but they could.
Because, this series has been so complete. 28. It's 28, not 27, 28
players. 28 players 28. Have come through the Grizzlies locker room.
They signed Bryce Cotton as their 28th player this season.
Pretty sure he was there for 10 days.
That's what the 10-day contracts do.
Yeah.
Right.
That's anyway, your prediction for tonight.
I've skirted around it for so long.
Xander Fabley. normal guy.
I'm just a regular guy. Predicting that Cleveland is going to win in seven, so that means I have to say Cleveland wins tonight.
You don't have to say anything.
I want Cleveland to win tonight because I want to see game seven. I think this one's going to be... I'm going to give you two predictions.
Oh, great.
Both of them are Cleveland. One of them is I want to see like a 118-110 game. That would be so much fun. Cleveland winning 118-110.
I want to see a buzzer beater, but we all want things.
Well, then I'll give you a buzzer beater for the other one. The other one is a grinded out game because Draymond Green's back, and it's going to be 90-88.
A low-scoring game.
Yeah.
All right.
Going to flip the script on you this time. 90-88 with J.R. Smith hitting a three at the buzzer.
Wow.
To win it. There you go.
J.R. Smith, the unanimous finals MVP.
J.R. Smith, the unanimous finals MVP. All right, well, now we've given you our predictions for tonight. There's nothing else to do.
When we're wrong, let us know. Remember to criticize me because...
Be sure to criticize him first, then make your point. but, yeah, we are... Oh, this is our first podcast that we are now on iTunes, everybody.
Absolutely.
We're on iTunes now. And also on Stitcher. And also on TuneIn. Don't really know what those last two are, but... The internet told me to try to get on them. So I'm on them. We're on them. We got on them. Just search Meet Me in the Middle on any of those.
Yeah.
You'll be able to find us. We're the arrow-y thing on there. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, Meet Me in the Middle. We tweet a lot about sports, as a matter of fact.
I believe our handle is at meet underscore.
It's actually at meet me with capital M's underscore middle.
There we go. So be sure to follow us on that.
But also our username is just meet me in the middle, all caps, no spaces.
You can find us by searching.
Not all caps. Meet Me in the Middle, No Spaces. I think that'll also pull it.
Yeah. Facebook. Obviously, as well. You can go to our website.
Website. Oh, we got a custom domain now. We are now meetmeintheMiddle.co.
Yeah, not .com, .co.
.co.
C-O.
Not UK.co, but
it's
just
the same
.co.
Site, but we are a lot more better looking. We had a makeover, and we look way better. It's like
good.
In the movies where the girl takes off the glasses and turns out she's pretty the whole time.
Oh, and then she gets her hair did, and then she's so prettier. Ister. Yeah, okay.
That's us. That's our website.
That's our website. It's so beautiful now. There's also links on there to our pages on iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn. Also, we're on Facebook. Meet Me in the Middle again. I think if you just search that, you'll find us.
Hey, make sure to check out Xander's brand new article live on the site.
Guys, if you go back to episode 2, I said that this was going to happen, and it's happening. Xander's Movie Corner. I got a review up.
I read it, and I'm not saying this because we're friends, but you did good.
Oh, thanks. It's such a resounding
compliment. I know. It's a...
I did passably well, probably.
No, you did well. That's good. Everyone
spoiler
will
alert.
It.
It's a Conjuring that's full of spoilers.
So if you haven't seen the movie...
The original from 2013. Guys, the original Conjuring from 2013. Because I watched it and I thought it was good. Spoiler alert. I thought it was a good movie.
If you haven't seen it, watch it, then read it. Or if you really like to be spoiled on things, which I don't think anyone really does, then don't.
Actually, I saw that. I Googled spoiler alert to see what the rules were on it because I wasn't exactly sure. I think it's 5 years, right? 5 years for spoiler alert. Anyways, they did a test and it said that movies with a twist, if you know the twist before you go in, you actually enjoy the movie more. I don't know how they do that, and I think it's completely wrong. But
I like going in with, you know, not really knowing much. I like to have like a little bit of the plot, and then I like going in to watch it. But then, I don't like seeing movies that I know what's going to happen.
I mean, we reference Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones does a great job with that with their episode titles, because they're usually misleading anyways. Because the episode... Never mind. Don't worry about it. So, do all that stuff that we did. Comment on our post. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Follow us on iTunes. Follow us on TuneIn.
Plugs.
We're going to get sponsored by Glade. And have a plug party. Glade plug-in party.
No, seriously. If you're listening, Glade...
Glade, yeah.
We
hey,
are
Johnson
fans.
& Johnson or whatever, whoever your parent company is. Glade, I have your dual-scented ones up in the upstairs in my house. And it smells great. It's fruity and fresh and delicious.
I mean, how awesome would a Glade free plug party be?
It's not free plugs because
we're
getting
paid. Free plug-in. Because we reference. Yeah.
We get free plug-ins every time we do that. I'd rather get money, though.
What's it's better than money? Good smells.
No. Money. I'll stink and have tons of money. I'll do that every day. Anyways, sports have been done for a long time. We've just been telling you to do dumb stuff for a while. We'll talk to you guys. Actually, we're about to do a second episode. This is going to be two for... This was an NBA special. We're
going to
list
up
it as too. Such. Next one is soccer special because there's so much soccer going on. We're doing that
absolutely
like directly, like right now.
You know what I realized I just did a lot?
What?
I said absolutely a lot.
Absolutely.
So if you really want to hear me say absolutely, listen to this over and over again.
Over and over again. Oh, BT Dubs, the intro and closing music is Joseph K by Hale's Corner. Their album Their album Garden View is out on Spotify and also iTunes if you want to buy it, and Bandcamp. If you guys don't know what that is, it's a great service. You can search them anywhere. And it's all great. So we'll see you guys in a couple minutes when I do this next one and whenever you listen to us again. Bye!
See ya.
Okay, bye. Yeah.